Welcome to the Analysys Mason podcast. My name is Christopher Baugh. I'm a partner at Analysys Mason and head of NSR. Today, we'll be discussing the topic of satellite-directed device, and the title is Satellite-Directed Device Ready for Prime Time. I'm joined today by one of my colleagues, Luke Palerm, who is a research director now within NSR and Analysys Mason. Welcome, Luke.
Thank you, Dave. Excited to be here today.
Excellent. Thank you. Luke is also the program head for our Satellite Strategies for Telcos program, which covers direct-to-device and many of the new, we call them crossover opportunities between the satellite market and the telecom market on the ground. So let's turn to direct-to-device. Direct-to-device, I would wager, in the last 12 months is one of arguably the hottest topics in the space industry, just because of the mass market appeal to having satellite signals going direct to a user's handset and what that might represent, especially out of coverage for ancillary revenue opportunity for telcos and MNOs. But it's apparent that it's maybe a little early in the game and maybe not ready to meet customer expectations of, you know, broadband coverage outside of a cell tower. So we're going to look at this today and what stage of development the market's in and the revenue opportunity too. So the first question for you is the services that satellite directed device can offer. What general services and applications does this new technology market support?
Right. So this is a very important question, because the revenue opportunity is linked to the service, that the quality of services that these constellations can offer. So based on our direct to device report, part of our satellite strategy for telcos program, we define four stages of technology. So today, it's emergency services, which is the first stage of development. Then the next stage will be messaging, which is still a fairly limited opportunity in terms of revenue potential. We size that in several hundred million dollars per year. For the market to really scale to a multi-billion opportunity, the industry needs to develop the voice and data capabilities. And that will still take a few years to develop.
And that seems to be the expectation, maybe in early days when the outside world looking in, they would expect, oh, broadband will be everywhere with these satellites in short order. It seems like that's still, I think you mentioned a few years off.
Right. So there are some challenges in terms of the availability of a spectrum, the supply of the different constellations, the rollout of these constellations, the standards, the stage of development of the standard, that, you know, pose some challenges in terms of the capabilities for direct-to-device. We expect that the technology is obviously going to evolve, but voice and data won't be available before, let's say, 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so still a good ways off. We've seen a lot of news announcements and big partnerships in the space, and many companies now targeting, so becoming operators and provisioning service, Apple, not the least of which. What stage of development are they, and what are their stages of development across, and how do they differ maybe in terms of offering satellite direct-to-device service?
Right. So here we see two very different blocks. On one hand, we have the traditional satellite operators that use satellite spectrum, so L and S-band. That would be Iridium, Globalstar, Inmarsat, and others. These constellations are operational today, so they can potentially offer services today. The challenge with them is that they are not compatible with existing mobile phones. So they need to convince the chipset manufacturer, the smartphone manufacturers, to incorporate those satellite bands in the smartphones. So the ramp up of services take a bit longer for them. Also, the amount of supply that they have available, it's not large, so they are fine for serving emergency services, messaging, but they don't have enough capacity to serve voice and data at the scale. On the other hand, we have the newcomers, the likes of Link, AST, Starlink. They plan to use terrestrial spectrum from space, and they are designing the constellation to have a much larger capacity from day one. Here, some of them, or actually all of them, have already done some initial tests with the smartphones. Link, AST did that last year. Starlink just launched 6 satellites and did the first test with modified smartphones. So you see a lot of progress in the technology on that side as well. But Link, for example, had some challenges raising funds. Now they just announced SPAC agreement, so they will be going public and they will get some funding to accelerate the deployment of the network. Similarly, AST just announced a funding round with Vodafone, Google, and AT&T. So they will be able to accelerate as well the deployment of the network. And Starlink, for sure, they did the initial test with these 6 initial satellites, and they will ramp up. They have a very aggressive ramp-up plan over this year to densify the constellation and be able to provide these direct-to-device services. We've done a series of profiles in our Satellite Strategies for Telcos program. So we have a lot of detail into each of these key players on the direct-to-device segment.
Okay, thanks, Luke. So you mentioned spectrum a couple of times and whether they're using satellite harmonized international spectrum or the MNO spectrum on the ground. I want to focus on the ground side. Is that a challenge today? Do we expect that to be a limitation or barrier to growth of, again, this has to be, I guess, governments and regulators getting on board with that utilization? Is that something we expect to be an impediment to growth?
Right. So there, for the actors using terrestrial spectrum from space, there are 2 key challenges. The first one is the regulatory front, as you mentioned. So they are trying to use a portion of the spectrum that was assigned for terrestrial purposes from space. So they need to get a special waiver from each and every regulator, from each and in every country that they want to operate. That's the first big challenge. The other big challenge is interference. So they want to use the same spectrum that the base stations on the ground are using. So there is some potential risk of creating interference, and also some potential risk of creating interference across the border. So spectrum assigned in country A cannot be used over spectrum assigned in country B. So there are a few challenges related to interference that these actors will need to address.
Okay. Yeah, it seems mind-boggling thinking cross-border roaming and, yes, big issues to solve. Let's talk about the ecosystem then. And, you know, it seems as if the ecosystem and the development from, you know, the silicon handset, the base station, all of the technology in space, and maybe lessons learned from some deals that may not have succeeded so far. And we point to the Iridium Qualcomm deal that went away a few months back. Can you talk a little bit about the ecosystem and the importance perhaps of the ecosystem in this market?
Right. So, yeah. So the ecosystem here is going to be very important. So no single actor alone will be able to develop this direct-to-device market. And as you point out, the Iridium Qualcomm deal, it's very relevant here because just to give a bit of background here, Iridium and Qualcomm developed an agreement to develop a platform for direct-to-device solution. Iridium was providing the satellite solution, the satellite constellation, and some elements of the technology. Qualcomm was developing the chipset and controlling a bit the platform around the solution. But they were not able to convince enough smartphone manufacturers to incorporate the chipset. And the ecosystem also did not attract enough interest from mobile operators or did not consider the mobile operators. So at the end of the day, since the platform or the solution did not gain enough traction, Qualcomm decided to terminate the deal. So that illustrates how important it is to consider the whole value chain here. So you need to work with chipset manufacturers, with smartphone manufacturers, with MNOs, which are at the end of the day control the relation with the end user. So it's very important to align all the steps of the value chain to make sure that this solution succeeds.
Absolutely. Definitely good lessons learned. So just final question here is bottom line, what in many of our clients and those that are reading or listening to this podcast today are telcos or on the ground looking at satellite directed device. What is that opportunity for them today? If we were to say to a telco, really take a solid look at the directed device market, what opportunity would we point them to?
Yeah, so today, on a short-term perspective, as I was saying before, emergency services, messaging, maybe some IoT services, it's still a relatively small direct revenue opportunity for them. Again, it's a few hundred million dollars per year for this messaging and emergency alerts opportunity. So the pure revenue opportunity is not huge now. But there are some other side benefits where telcos, MNOs can build differentiation from their competitors. That means that these services can potentially be very important for their subscribers. They are life-saving services. Emergency alerts, we hear a lot of examples from Apple that, they are saving lives with this service. So it's a very important service that maybe it's not generating a lot of revenues, but it can definitely be a differentiator for the mobile operator and the telco. Also, it's a way of building a strong brand around innovation with all the technology happening and developing on the space side of things. Now, it's very important to be linked to that branding of innovation. Also, when we consider the medium to long-term potential of this market, it's definitely very important to keep an eye on the developments on the satellite direct-to-device opportunity because, again, this will develop as a multi-billion opportunity in the next 3 to 5 years. So being early in the market will allow the telcos to influence the standards, influence the ecosystem, and make sure that in the future they can really capture a big portion of this opportunity.
Fantastic. Thanks, Luke. Excellent commentary. And a market that, if I were to characterize it, early days, but massively important. And I think we've used the term the largest opportunity in the satellite space industry's history, potentially, given the reach and the market potential. I completely agree. Well, with that, we'll conclude our podcast. There is more information and content on this topic on the Analysys Mason website, the Satellite and Space Practice site, and of course, this program, Satellite Strategies for Telcos. To automatically receive future episodes, please subscribe to the Analysys Mason podcast. Thank you for listening.